Hey, I'm gonna jump in and maybe Phil, you can talk about the topic you thought of for today. We've been going on for quite a while. Maybe we'll go on for another 15 or so minutes today and then wrap it up.
Sure. I mean, this is great because the two things we were talking about were more of the things I wanted to sit back and listen to and learn about. But I'll take it a slightly different direction and talk about mistakes and address somewhat of an elephant in the room. So, I mean, I should back up a step. Ironically, one of the biggest mistakes, or all the biggest mistakes I've ever made, were errors where I just didn't do something. So, in particular, along somewhat similar to the vein we were just discussing, I had plenty of knowledge and opportunity and reason to buy VeriSign about 5 years ago, and would have made about four times my money by now, I think, and just dipped my toe in the water instead of really loading up, and it was really stupid. So those are the, and likewise, Constellation Software or some others that, there's a very narrow band of these types of businesses that I understand, but I've certainly understood several of them and at least in a couple of cases, completely whiffed and made a huge mistake. And on the flip side, I've been relatively better, or even quite good in an absolute sense at just avoiding mistakes. One area, though, that's really interesting and worth discussing, and maybe we won't get into it fully today, is the airline. So, John, as you know, that's something I've talked about before with you, somewhat obliquely. I hate making individual investment comments public. I think it's somewhat difficult. It's just, you have to think for yourself and do your own research and do your own homework. So I don't like to put out, kind of black and white recommendations. But, I think I've talked quite a bit about the industry and the structure of the industry. And I thought the opportunity there remained as good as any, in that the gap between perception and reality was just massive. I mean, people still really saw the airlines as an old economy, really crappy business. And the truth was that because of the credit card programs, completely restructuring the economics of the business, and because of the wave of bankruptcies and then consolidations that rationalize competition, you had this kind of amplified effect where the industry got better and more stable, and the capital intensity went way down. By no means did it become anywhere near as good a business as something like VeriSign, but it was still, an average to slightly above average business trading at a below average price. And then the coronavirus pandemic hit and everything kind of went up in smoke, so to speak. It was just, the disaster that you always have to prepare for and hope that it never arrives. And so that's something I've always been interested in thinking about is, once this is all settled, and by the way, and so in full disclosure, I mean, I came into the year with two large investments in two airlines. And my personal style is pretty concentrated. So at any given time, we generally only own 8 or 10 investments. So these were two pretty significant investments, and they were about as large as I would ever be comfortable taking them. But in late February, into the first week or 10 days of March, just realized this was the big one. And so we ended up exiting and selling our entire investment, in a matter of a couple of days in early March. And I've had a lot of commentary and a lot of feedback from people since then, mostly positive. And it's a really fascinating debate because I just see it as, there's no such thing as certainty ever. There's no such thing as a zero probability of one thing or 100% probability of another. Everything's in a range. And so this pandemic was never a 0% chance of happening. We can debate whether it was 1% or 10% or something like that in any given year. I had always framed this kind of outcome being more along the lines of, the big one in Seattle, where the Juan de Fuca plate slips under the North America plate, and we have a 9.0 earthquake off the coast of Seattle, and SeaTac Airport's closed for 6 months, or, a tornado hits Atlanta and closes the airport there, or something like that. A terrorist attack, a geopolitical shock of some kind. This was a different, disaster along that fold. But so anyway, the discussion that I think is worth having that's really interesting is where were the odds, and then how do you evaluate those odds in after the fact? And so was this a mistake? And so I would say it was partially a mistake for sure, but I don't think it was anywhere near a full mistake. I was cognizant of these types of risks. I think I was getting paid appropriately for those risks and in most scenarios. And, just like any insurance policy you write, just like any game of poker or any game of chance that you play with imperfect information. Sometimes you make good decisions with bad outcomes. But what I think is even more important is just when the picture changed dramatically in the first few months of the year. I mean, my initial lens was that in January that this was SARS-2, which it really is, and that it would be, you know, relatively constrained to Asia again and be an Asia-centric problem. And that very quickly, obviously, was not the case, you know, as we went into February. So I just, you know, I had to change my mind very quickly as things happened. But you know, it's been very interesting to evaluate that in hindsight and to get the various forms of feedback I've gotten. And the forms of feedback I've gotten have almost invariably been, and less so the camp that says you're an idiot for buying a crappy business like the airlines and you got what you deserved, and more so people that said, wow, that must have been really hard for you to change your mind so quickly and do a 180. And I just find it really interesting that those are basically the only two responses that I've been getting. And I think they're both wrong because I don't think it was an entirely unintelligent bet. Like I said, uncertainty is just something we all have to live with, and you have to consider the odds both in advance and after the fact. And secondarily, I mean, if you're not ready to change your mind quickly, you probably shouldn't be making these kinds of decisions in the first place. So I didn't view the decision to pull a 180 as some sort of massive accomplishment either. So anyway, I just wanted to throw those comments out as a discussion point, because it's certainly been timely and interesting for me to live through that for the past few months.
Phil, I would infer that from your mentioning SeaTac and Atlanta Hartsfield that you probably owned Alaska and Delta.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, those were the two that we owned coming into this.
Two of the three best carriers. Given the pandemic, given the debt that these companies have had to take on to survive, given some of the public comments about the employment picture, global travel, if you will, particularly with Delta, what would it take you to wade back in? I mean, assuming what they've done with credit card programs and gates and optimization of, you know, selling first class seats versus giving away to their frequent flyers and elite status customers, the industry did a lot of good, and Delta did a lot of good, and Alaska is an incredibly well-run business. What would it take, you know, for you to say, chalk this thing up to the very tail end of the distribution curve, and, you know, once you get travelers back to some normal level of travel, you know, are they companies you would wade back into?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not an issue at all of once bitten, twice shy, at least for me. It's just really an issue of what are the risks you're assuming and how much you're getting paid for them. And again, I do not want to issue any kind of investment advice or even imply anyone follow my line of thinking on this. Everyone should take this for what they're paying for it and what it's worth, and do their own thinking and their own homework in that regard. But I find it very, very difficult to see any favorable odds priced anywhere into the capital structure in more or less any of the U.S. airlines, and more or less true around the world. I mean, things are slightly different in Europe with some nuances there. But look, yeah, I mean, again, the Alaska, Delta, many of the other airlines did nothing wrong per se in not preparing for this, let's say. But and I think they've actually dealt with it very well. I can't even imagine how hard this has been. But yeah, if the prices were such that I thought, you know, we were getting more than adequately compensated for the risk we were taking on, I would gladly wade back in. I just think that that range of potential outcomes has gotten really wide. I think it's very hard to have any confidence. I mean, again, I would have said with 80 or 90% confidence in January that global volumes for passenger volumes would be higher 3 to 5 years from now. I would have said, you know, that we would have had recessions and cycles, but that the general trajectory for air travel, and particularly the kinds of air travel that is important to the airlines, which is, you know, certain forms of business travel, international alliances, the credit card programs, that all of that would be on a generally favorable footing. And I think it's just very, very hard to predict where that industry is going to be in a few years. I mean, even the realist executives would say that they really don't know when business travel will come back to prior levels. And I think it's very reasonable to expect that if, you know, on a scale of 0 to 100, if 100 was the run rate of business travel that we had, you know, in December and January, that we might not get back to 100 anytime soon and possibly ever, as people are realizing how much they can get done virtually and remotely. So I would gladly wade back in, but it's certainly not going to be at anything like the prior assumptions or the, you know, at a related point, the prior prices.
It's quite impressive that you're able to change your mind so quickly, because I know it's, you know, hard to prove hard to even think through a counterfactual, but it seems like the thesis was on the brink of actually showing itself to be a good one. And then, you know, I don't think anyone really underwrote any investments with thinking about what a global pandemic would mean for their equity positions.
Yeah. Well, I certainly didn't, like I said, I certainly didn't foresee a pandemic, but I do always try to think about what are some really bad things that could happen. And in an industry like this, that's capital intensive, you know, if you have your physical assets taken out of play for a long period of time, that would be pretty bad. I mean, in the case of Twitter, it would be, you know, what if the bad guys take over your entire infrastructure for some period of time, or you have a hack that really, you know, jeopardizes the inner workings of the company or something like that. And so I think you have to pre-plan for disaster. And in this case, I mean, disaster just hit us squarely between the eyes. There's just no other way to look at it. And so if the disaster passes, I mean, to Chris's point, though, it's really painful because they really did do everything right in the past 5 years or so. I mean, with some very limited exceptions to that, most executives and most airlines did everything right to be rational in their business operations and the management of their companies, and to see it flush, because they have taken on a massive amount of debt now, which is kind of ironic because people ignore enterprise value so often in equity calculations. You know, a massive amount of the balance sheet has been put in hawk. I mean, the debt levels that have been raised, I mean, even some of the credit card loyalty programs have been auctioned off, so to speak, in a rush to raise liquidity and debt financing. So it's going to be a really long, painful road back for those airlines to ever get back to anything like the footing that they had, you know, 6 months ago.
Well, for what it's worth, I mean, I remember after 9/11, everyone was looking for the next terrorist attack to happen. And then we haven't had one on that scale ever since, fortunately. Right. And I wonder if now we're kind of looking for the next pandemic, or thinking this one will stick around forever, when I think, you know, this is probably a matter of another year or two. And then we will, you know, it'll be like a 9/11, hopefully. It'll start receding into memory.
I hope so. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, the problem I think you get down to, and maybe we'll kick this off next time or continue it next time, is just what does it mean for the businesses that have had to survive this? Because you look at the damage that's been done to the airline's balance sheets to just get through this period, and whether it's a year or two or however long it takes to come back, because yeah, I think it'll come back. I'm not saying the industry's over or anything like that, far from it, but it's going to take a lot of time to repair this damage.
But one big difference this time around, right? In 9/11, it was flying itself that was perceived as unsafe. Right. And now it's like, it's the world. Right. So maybe people come back much quicker.
Yeah. Again, I'm open to that. I mean, my comments about business travel notwithstanding, people love to travel. People love to get out and see new places. They love to connect with people. They love to take vacations. Again, business travel is a different animal, but I don't mean to say that business travel is never going to happen again. I just think that the range of outcomes is so much wider now than it was 6 months ago that, you know, it's just like pricing an option. I mean, the higher the implied volatility is, you know, the more the option's worth. And in this case, the more you have to be paid to sell it and to own it. So
clearly you'd think that regional and leisure travel would pick back up first.
That's always been the case. And that's what you're seeing so far in the data. That's definitely true. Yeah.
Southwest is flying a much more robust schedule. Alaska is flying a more robust schedule. You know, they're not flying at load factors that they'd want. But
that's also competitive, right? I mean, American took on kind of a flyer by being very aggressive. So it's, again, the airline industry is as fascinating an industry as I've ever looked at from a microeconomic perspective. I mean, it's just every possible topic you could ever imagine in business and finance and strategy is right at the forefront of this industry. And so, yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of game theory going on that's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out.
Well, guys, I think we don't want to exhaust our listeners on the first go around here. this has been terrific. And I think we'll wrap it up unless anyone has any further comments or thoughts and kind of leave some of the follow-up and further discussion for our next go around.
Nope, the only thing we have to do is figure out the name of the podcast.
Yeah, maybe we can do a Twitter poll.
That would be great.
That's a good idea.
All right. Well, thank you so much, guys. This was terrific. I really love the discussion and look forward to more in the future.
Likewise.
Talk to you guys next week. This was fun.
Thanks, John.
Great. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.
Bye.